Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols back here with another Tactical Fitness Report. And today we're doing something a little different. We usually kind of bombard the whole Twitter, YouTube, internet universe with, you know, getting through buds and getting to buds. But today we're just going to talk about, after all of that training, what's your life like in buds? And this came from a very well written and thought out question from a young man. And Jeff, I'm just going to read this real quick.
Yeah, definitely.
I was wondering if you guys could do an episode that goes in depth on what day-to-day looks like for those in the teams, especially those with families, wives, kids, and you know, what were your experiences was like. He goes on to say, you know, most all online information is a fascination of getting to and through buds, but I'd like to hear a lot of people dropping because it wasn't for them, right? A lot of times people drop because it wasn't for them for various reasons.
Right. That's the quote. That's what's just so you guys know context. That is a very, actually, believe it or not, to this day, it's still a very common reason as to why people actually say they quit and ring the bell, because you have to fill out paperwork when you get done. Like, why did I quit? It's like a legal document to cover Naval Social Warfare's ass, essentially, right?
Yeah.
The question is, why do you leave? One of the most common answers in that questionnaire is the team life wasn't for me. That's literally the quote from First Phase. But none of them are team guys.
Right. So
this is really the kind of top topic that we're going to cover, guys.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because, you know, buds is for nobody. I mean, you're not going to be a career bud student. I mean, that
isn't the end state.
That is not something you want to do for a career, I promise you.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to, that is the gateway into the career and to the community that we're going to talk about now, what that life is like. So Jeff, you want to start it off with, let's just go regular team first, and then we'll advance into, you know, the
other place. Yeah.
Tier one level.
Yeah. So like, again, like, this is something that I know Stu is going to probably throw out this disclaimer as well. The things that I say are my own personal beliefs shaped by my own experiences. Okay. So, this particular topic has been put off for a long time, probably due in part of me and my lack of maturity. So now in a place in my life where I've been through some things, and I'm able to look at this with different lens. So my experiences when I was at SEAL Team 5, I was single going there. You know, I got, my son was born while on my second deployment at SEAL Team 5. It was an unplanned pregnancy. And we, you know, his mother and I essentially are still co-parenting our son. So I have that experience, right? And it's funny, because I'm not going to speak to what it was then or anything like that necessarily, because there's a lot of reasons why that marriage didn't succeed. And that's not the point of this conversation, really. Okay. In that sense of like, why did Jeff's marriage fail in that? No, it's like, I'm going to try and give you an idea of, like, now having been through it, being out of the teams, looking at my previous life with, like, again, clear lens. And I'll say this, because the question specifically, Sam, I see it, and it says, hey, married guys in the teams. That's the key phrase in which I'm going to key in on, in part of the sentence of that question. And I can only say this, is that because I'm now currently in a healthy relationship, and now what I do is I try to put myself as I am now into my, you know, like those hypothetical shoes. Having now, I can look back and go, oh, those are my experiences of deployments. How would I have all that stuff? Like, this would be like a long conversation, but I'll try to write to the point, is that if it were me, having the experiences that I do and making the mistakes that I have and knowing now really what I want and what I think is really possible in the teams, I didn't, you know, for a long time, I would have said, it's just not possible to have a healthy relationship in the teams. I would have said that just straight up, just be like, you know, you're 98% of the team guys get divorced. They think it's something like that, statistics in the high 90s. And I look at that and go, well, is that a byproduct of what? What is that? You know? So I go, well, I can't decide why that is, but I can decide for myself how I might want to handle that now. And I say it this way, if I were going to the teams now, okay, as a married individual, right? Or when I'm in the teams and I get married, the very first thing I would do is seek counseling. That's it. The first thing I would do. And I here's my personal beliefs. I would not seek counseling within the military. I would not seek counseling within the military. I would find it to like, I don't know, like in a military town, it's going to be probably hard to find somebody that doesn't do that. But like, I've seen a therapist for years now and he doesn't take insurance. The reason why he doesn't take insurance is because now you're like, the way I look at this when it comes to counseling, and this is my belief, is that like, if someone is going to be paying for my counseling, there's not really an incentive for me to go. So if I'm paying for my counseling, right, for me, myself, my couple, whatever it is, and that's my incentive. That's just me, okay? My experience of the counselors in the military are probably poor, mostly probably because of my personal perspective at the time. So again, I'm only speaking to what I believe would probably work for me in my mentality and my thought process now. So that's like kind of where I leave it right there. And I, there's more to talk about this, but like, first and foremost, I would seek counseling for a number of reasons, but one of them really would just be like, okay, we need to create a dialogue between the spouse, girlfriend, whatever, to a place, because I know looking back in all these years, I'd be like, well, I don't tell anybody anything because they couldn't possibly understand. That is a selfish burden to carry. I really believe that to be like a selfish narcissistic, like, yeah, nobody can possibly understand. So I'm just going to self-medicate, self-deprecate, self-explode. Okay. So no, like that's why counseling is, because I need to, who else on this planet is able to take some of the burden from you willingly if you share that emotion with the person that you love and loves you back? You're not overburdening them unless you don't learn how to deal with it. But including your spouse, your girlfriend, and every aspect of the emotional side of the team's not, we're not talking OPSEC and things like this. That's where people get weird. They go, well, I can't tell my wife anything because it's OPSEC stuff. But no, you can tell your wife and husband how you're feeling. How are these trips, the strains, the long deployments, how is that making you feel? That's the context of the conversation, not like, well, I went on this mission targeting this guy. No. So that's kind of where I'm going to start with this, Stu. It's like, first and foremost, like, we know that the military has its stressors. And if you get in a special forces community, it'd be ignorant to think that those stressors are not going to be quite robust if you spend enough time in it, because you love the job and the job is demanding, not because it's a bad job. So keeping that in context, about like, well, I love the job I do, I'm passionate about it on this. Like, well, I got this girlfriend, wife, I love her, I'm passionate about that. It's like, they can cohabitate if you set your ego aside and say, hey, like, it's okay to talk about how you feel if how you feel is just miserable, right? Especially the people you love. So that's kind of where I start. Get counseling, create a place in which you can have open communication that is not shrouded in judgment or, well, I can't let anyone know I'm talking to a counselor because that's a real thing. It's a real thing in sports, real thing in the teams. Like, nobody wants their leadership knowing they're seeing a psychiatrist. Like, that's, I get it. But yeah. Again, if the interest is making the most lethal operator in the world, go find a counselor, right? Sun Tzu, right? Garden and a Warrior. Like, it's just, that is it. That's where it was born.
Yeah.
That whole idea.
Well, I will say this, you know, nowadays, and I would say probably in the last 10, 15 years, they've gotten really good at teaching the operator what is happening hormonally to you when you're going through your normal day at work and your normal deployments, right? You start understanding that there is a physiological process that's happening when you're constantly doing missions, when you're missing sleep, when you're not eating well. I mean, it's this big snowball of stress that occurs. And at the same time, you're trying to balance discussions with what's going on at the house, with your wife and family. And it's two different snowballs that sometimes can mesh into one and then they just ruin each other. Right. Yeah. So, they have done a lot better. You know, when you hear about resilience training, don't blow it off because it is going to be very educational and you can use a lot of your tactical skills that you have acquired throughout training, throughout BUDS as well, to deal with many of these symptoms of being overstressed, whether that is breathing skills. You know, I remember when I first learned how to breathe to help me, deregulate, just downshift and calm myself down. I'm like, oh, this is just like shooting, you know?
Yep.
Take a big breath.
Create a process.
Yeah. You know, you understood. I said, well, I've been doing this. I just didn't know why I was doing it. And that's why a lot of those resilience programs help you understand that. But let's go back to the question. How many days in the year, or months in the year is probably an easier way to count it, were you gone from your house?
Yeah. For 11 years, I was gone 308 days a year on average. So there you go, right? That I actually know that because I remember submitting that, because at the end I had to sell back leave and I had to prove that I didn't sell, you know. So it was like there's this numerical admin process I had to go through to go, okay, well, and that also goes into the VA algorithm of some sort, like how much time away from home, like whatever it was. So, but it was 308 days over 11 years is what I averaged. So, and that is an average.
Yeah. Now so that is also 20 years of war.
Like, yes,
you joined post 9/11, 20 years of war. I was in 10 years before 9/11, and my time away still, even in a peacetime world. Let's see, I didn't get married until I was a lieutenant. So I was almost 5 years in the Navy before I got married, but I'd been dating the same person since buds. So she went through this whole process with me and kind of understood what I was going through the whole time. She knew what she was getting into, in other words. So it was a long process. So that was very helpful with that. But I will say that I was going to probably get married 3 years in, but I was gone so much that year just didn't make sense,
right,
to do it. And so I think I figured it out. It was out of a year and a half, I was gone a year.
Yeah.
And those were just small trips. You know, you do a 3 week trip here, you do a 4 week trip here, you go a 6 week sub trip here. You know, you go to a school for 2 months, you come back, you know, you're just constantly training or traveling to train, whether that's a school or as your own group. And that takes a lot of time. I would say I was gone 9 months a year before I even did a deployment.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Your workups are just deployments, right? I mean, that's the thing, you know, like if I look at my naval career of 11 years, I deployed 2 years to the day I joined the Navy. Right. And then the last 16 months or so, my time in service, I didn't deploy. So that leaves about 11 years. It leaves a sandwich of about 7.5 years, 7.75 years. Of that 7.75 years, I was deployed 4.25 years in total. So of my actual, like, no kidding, you're through training. Okay. And then I stopped being a deployed SEAL of 3.5 years out of 11. So you look at it and go, oh, I was literally gone from my house, you know, 308 days. Like I was gone for 4.5 years, almost, or 4.25, almost 4.33 years. So, and it's like, okay. So then I remember doing this stat. It was my second deployment was crazy. So we got back from our first deployment. I went right into workup because they reorged to do the PSD in Iraq, right? Like they did a total reorg and they shortened some deployments, condensed some teams, 3 and 5 went out the door together. So it really shortened our 18-month workup to about 5.5 months. So in that 5.5 months, 4 months of it, I was in sniper school. So I got back, went right to sniper school, got out of sniper school. 2 weeks later, did an FTX. 2 weeks later, deployed. Mm. So like I slept in my bed 8 times that year, 8 times. I was paying rent, $1,600. I slept in my bed 8 times that year, 8.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, it was like, oh Jesus. And I wasn't even in Virginia Beach yet, where we were never home.
Right.
Never home here. So, but again, just to be super, super, super clear. Number one, it's perfect. It was exactly what I signed up for, really. Okay. So be careful what you ask for. I get exactly what I wanted, you know? So, this is really like, this is not like, oh my God, I'm spending all this time with my family. I'm like, well, that's the job. Like that's, could I have loved to have had this perfect family life and the team? Yeah, but it wasn't me. It wasn't my life choices. It wasn't the scenario that I found myself in. I found myself in a place where I was always gone. And I can, here's a little segue and I give you this thought after this. Like I was like a year and a half from getting out and I literally was in the weight room. I hadn't started dating this particular person yet. And she was in the weight room with her best friend at the command. And I don't know what we were talking about. It was just, we were friends because I was working with them. And one of the girls had said, she's like, what are you like? Why are you so confused as to how like women have such a hard time dating teen guys? What was it say? Like, I'm paraphrasing the conversation, but she, and I was like, okay. And she's brilliant, real smart woman. And I was just like, I got to hear this. And so I was like, listen, she goes, you think about it guys. Like, think about this. Like you want like this beautiful, put together, educated, articulate woman that's going to be at home and doing like having her job, like having her life.
Yeah. Busy.
If you come home after a bunch of deployments and you're a fucking head case. Like you're angry, you're irritable. You can't be all this stuff. It's like, who in their right mind female is going to date you? Like who really, like think about that for a minute. I was like, holy shit, she's right. Like all of us are like, we're gone all the time. Like we party hard. Like it's just the stereotype of the community that exists. Like, no, look who we attract, folks. I mean, honestly, like I'm not trying to create a stereotype, but look at the people that we tend to date when we're in the teens, right? No disrespect to anyone, but it's the women that we tend to date and attract are the women that tend to be okay with that transient chaos. And we ourselves, I wasn't okay with the transient chaos. Like, but that's the only type of woman that I really could genuinely attract, is someone that's like, oh yeah, he's gone all the time, whatever. Like that to me was like, it's like meeting a woman in a bar. It makes no fucking sense to me. Like, why would I ever do that? Why would I ever entertain dating someone from a bar? It's like the same thing. Why would I ever entertain dating someone that I've met in teams in that chaotic world? Now, the last thing I say is like, I've met guys that have been married happily in that chaotic world. I'm like, oh, okay. So my point is it's me. I wasn't ready to accept the responsibility of being communicate to the people I love, be open to what I'm feeling, all those sort of things that didn't allow for a healthy relationship. It just didn't for me. I didn't allow for a healthy relationship.
Yeah. You know what? Let's, answer something specific on this one too. When you were at the team and you were in town, what was that day like for you?
It was packing for the next trip. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Like it was literally, hey, like you get back from Tennessee at a shooting school. Literally you get back on a Sunday, you fly back on a Sunday or a Saturday if you're lucky, right? Or you pay your own money to change your ticket, right? I get home and it's like, oh, hey, gear list is on the team table. And everything has to be buttoned up. They'll say button up in a Connex boxes, IC90s palette has to be buttoned up by Sunday at 8 a.m. because they're going to put it on an air, like, boom. So you're like, I get home on a Saturday at the teams, drop off my orders, go home, depending what time I get home, like maybe 4 hours of myself and my family, maybe go to sleep, get up super early, go pack. And then hurry home so I can spend 2 or 3 hours because my flight leaves on Sunday again. So maybe 4 hours I have at home a week.
Yeah.
That was my life. That's the life I chose.
Yeah. Ours was probably a little different. There may be a 2 week block where you're actually at the team doing first thing in the day. You start off with a team PT for a couple of hours. And then you're right. You're getting ready for the next trip, whatever that trip was. It might be admin day to just get all the paperwork done because you're flying, you're renting vans and you're doing all this stuff. And then the other days are, securing ammo and weapons and gear. And, everybody's got their own job in the platoon. And like you said, you button everything up and you get ready to go again. But then there's some nice days. There's some days when you're like, all right, you PT out of there by noon, go home and be a family man for, for a few days, So there are some
and holidays too. Like if you happen to be in NSW and you're back in the United States during a holiday, that's the one that really like to call it the basket leave type scenario. Like NSW and its leave policy is about as good as you're going to ever find in the military in a government service. It's amazing, right? In that sense of the command really does do that. And, you know, and I'll say like from SEAL Team 5 to the command I ended up at, travel is, we gained a ton of free time because the command's ability to travel the way that it does. So that freed up a ton of space, like, because we're flying direct on our own planes, right? Yeah. We're flying here, like, and most of the time we would leave here and we'd jump in, right? Kind of thing. Like, yeah. Make it a scenario. Hey, like, that's our first work day. Cold hit. Jump in, boom. And the work day's done.
Like, that's so funny.
That was the really cool thing about where we were at. It's like, you show up on time and you're like, hey, here's the goals for the day. You screwed up, we'll do it again. But if you knock all three of these runs out from 11, right, at night and sunsets, you're going to hit three cold hits. You do it great. We're done. It's not like that's the other big side of the other side of the teams is like when I was at SEAL Team 5, it was like, well, we're here. We're going to be here from sunup to sundown. And it's just drudgery once you've been through it. Right. For me, I say, like, I don't want to do the same workup year after year.
Yeah.
And that's the way that it was for me. I was like, I'm not going to do this. So that when I went over and got through that selection, I was like, oh, like, this is awesome. Like, okay, we have our own plane that's going to be ready. Like, we just drive up to the plane, get off. It's already been packed. We land on site. Our rental cars are there waiting for us. No kidding. Like, oh, the keys in the car, everything. You just drive off. GPS is already programmed for your hotel. Boom, it's there. Like, it's done. Like, it's literally ran like a pro team. Like, if you're the Yankees, that's how it's ran. It's nice. Everything. And so I say that because it frees up a ton of that ancillary space. I'm not sitting at Norfolk International Airport on a Sunday when I should be hanging with my friends and family. Instead, I'm meeting at the team at 10 a.m. We're flying direct and we're jumping in at noon. We do a cold hit at 12:30. We're done working by 2.
Nice.
Right. And then the next day it's all nights. We do one day cold hit and then we're on a trip. And it's like, as soon as the trip is done, literally in the day that the trip is done, it's like, what do? You pack everything up. It goes straight to the bird. You go home. When you're ready. Like, when do we go? When you get the bird packed up? Oh, we don't have to wait. No, it's your plane. It's where do we land? Right here. And then our cars are right there. You just drive home.
That's nice. That's living.
Yeah. So that's the thing is like, I don't want people to think that there's this like, oh, my doom and gloom. It's like, listen, I chose to be gone that much. I did. Why? Well, I wasn't in a happy relationship. I had my son home, but I just was my way of getting away until he was about 6. And then I was like, I didn't like being away from him as much. And so that's when my mentality changed, you know? So I don't want people to think that the team isn't like, I hate when people say, oh, the team life isn't for me. It's like, well, you're a bud student, you know, like give it a shot. You know, I think it's worth it. It's a worthy shot. It really is.
Yeah. Don't let that be your excuse. Because you're not getting a good taste of what life is like. I will say this, though. You know, when you're going through buds and they know they can't break you now, let's say you've been through Hell Week and, you know, pretty much people don't quit after Hell Week. You know, people might get injured or they might fail something, but people don't quit after Hell Week. But I have seen it happen a few times, and it only happened when this one instructor would be like nice cop to you, you know, and just say, yeah, hey, yeah, doing pretty well here. So you got a girlfriend, Ensign Smith? I'm like, yeah, I got a girlfriend. Yeah, I used to have a girlfriend. Used to have a wife, you know.
Yeah. Here's a question. What's the most marriages you've ever heard in the teams? Mine's 7. I've heard of 7 wives.
Successful ones?
No, I'm saying for one person.
Oh,
I know one guy in the team's a warrant officer. He's been married 7 times.
Oh, wow. No, I don't know anything.
That's rare. It's not like all team guys. Like, that's not what I mean, but just to be silly, right? Well,
I will say this. Let's go with statistics. Because half of all marriages don't work anyway, no matter
it's not a team situation.
No matter what job you're in. Now, I will say, I think you spit out something like 98%. I think it's a little lower than that. I think team divorces were 75, at least least back when I was looking into it. It might be different post 9/11. But it was like 75%. It could be more, could be less, could be in that ballpark between 75 and 98. I don't know.
It's a lot.
it's more than the national average. Let's just say that. But I think the ones I've seen work extremely well. And the kids are well-rounded. And it comes down to a tiger mom, basically. You know, you have a wife that is able to handle everything without you. That's the kind of woman that you need in this job.
That's not the woman I was, again, with respect, that's not the women I was speaking about. It's like I'm talking like the guys I know too. Mom's got it on lockdown. And that's just, and she is taking it on. And then, but what I also see with those people too, the same folks, when you're done at the teams, you're gone. Like you're not there. You're not hanging out. You're not like when it's time, but and you're allowed to be that way. We'll call that allowed. That is a person that's able to fit into that mold of like choosing your own schedule. Once you've hit all those milestones and you're all that sort of things, and you're super dependable, and you start working your way up the chain of command, you just get a point where like, I'm controlling the work schedule for these guys. We don't need to be here. Get out of here.
Yep.
And you start seeing more and more of that from some people. And then some people, like if you have that crusty old master chief that's been through 6 divorces and hates everyone, you're going to be working a lot more. Truthfully, you will. You'll be working on their schedule. But if you're working for a master chief that believes in like, hey, family and taking care of that, you'll do that. Like you are at the mercy of leadership. And that's the military. Like that's what you signed up for, like it or not. That's just the reality.
Yeah, that's a good point. I will say this too. Whenever I was in this journey, deciding where I wanted to go next, I actually found an opportunity to go to shore duty. Kind of early in my career. I did 5 years at, SDVs almost. And then there was an opportunity. The Naval Academy was adding more SEAL billets to the academy. We actually had like 5 SEALs there at one point when I was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like, senior chiefs and, E7s and above and an officer. And usually there was a year transition where there were 2 officers,
gotcha.
And we had like our own little platoon for SEAL training. Our job was really to focus on preparing and screening the large number of people that wanted to be SEALs at that time to go to mini buds or so, as they call it now. And then get those billets, and we would prepare them as best we could. And we did pretty well with it too. I mean, the Academy guys have a pretty good percentage of making it.
Yeah.
I mean, not, and it's not, has nothing to do with me. It's just,
it's preparation. It's
just the way it is. They have a pretty good pipeline of preparation that occurs, something to do every year, to get to that
clear milestone
journey. Yeah. I mean, we sent 20 my year and we graduated 26, so that means all 20 of us made it, and then 6 were lateral transferred in, we just had a really good group of guys. But that's just how that was. And what that did for me, that was a shore duty. So I was home every day, and it was the first time my wife and I had lived in the same state. That was fun. I actually enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed, being a coach, because I felt like I was a coach, as a mentor, as instructor. I was kind of going between those 3 roles. I also coached kids that couldn't swim and had to pass the swim and remedial failures and all that.
Right.
And it was one of those things where, I'll go back to the teams if I miss it. And I it was one of those places for me where I also had a kid. My firstborn was while I was there. And I think between that, really not missing the teams very much, and then also loving what I was doing, it kind of drove a decision for me to kind of get out and kind of pursue a career in coaching, really. And luckily I was able to, coach and write about it in a manner that actually worked. But that was my journey. And those, if you can get a shore duty, which there are shore duties available, you know, when you're in the teams, you might be a recruiter. You might be at the Pentagon.
Buds.
Oh yeah.
Shore duty, you know, SQT, right. So those billets are definitely sure. And they're much needed. Well, also because it keeps the subject matter experts in the community as teachers and mentors. So people are like, why is the SEAL team so good? Well, that is what I would say. That's the biggest reason why there's so much, I'll call it, instead of saying good, we'll call it like tactical, positive consistency, whatever you want to call it, like that aura around it exists confidently because it keeps recycling its own subject matter experts and keeps putting them back out as leaders and mentors. So that's the other side too, is once you've gone through the teams and you've spent, like, yeah, it's warranted. Like you've spent a couple of deployments, like, whoa, I need to pump my brakes, give back as a BUDS instructor, whatever, like do that, SQT, or whatever it is. It's a necessary break. It's not, and that's the thing too, is like, it depends on your leadership. Some of the leadership's like, hey, if you're not deploying, you suck. Or it's like, hey, take time for yourself. It all depends on leadership. Like my leadership by majority was always like, well, if you don't deploy, you're going to get passed by. You're going to get passed up. Your peer group, you're going to, all this stuff. Like, well, you got to go to free fall jump master, not all these sort of things. If you miss any of those, your peer group advances past you and you don't make rank at the command. So it's like, well, and so this is the phrase that was always said. It's like, this place is an emotionless machine. It will keep on rolling with or without you. It doesn't matter. Everyone really kind of thinks that they're not expendable.
Yeah.
You absolutely, just like what Stu's like, there's someone younger than you with a similar knowledge base with a desire to gain a much larger knowledge base below you always.
Yeah. No one is irreplaceable.
You bet you. Out 100% true. Like, as awesome as you think you are as a leader or a chief or whatever it is, well, as soon as you walk away, as soon as your leadership moment ends, within the hour, they're going to be like, well, who's that guy? Like, we don't know. No, you either have a job to go do or you've been passed by. And that's the competitive sort of vibration that exists within there from my perspective. And that for me keeps people sharp. I think if you know, like, you're, hey man, if I don't do the job, if I don't continue to professionally develop myself, someone else is going to have a better knowledge base and they're going to take over my position. And that was very real at the command I left. It's not a real common thing on the white sides as much, just because it's a much larger group of people. There's much more positions for LPOs and things like that. Where I was at, there was 4 LPO spots. That's it. That's it. For the entire SEALs, for every single SEAL, when I showed up, there was 4 LPO spots, 1 in each squadron. That was it.
Wow.
That was it. So it's like, you got at least 6 to 8 years before you even have a chance to make chief, right? Everyone I went through BUDS with is a master chief now.
Yeah.
Right. But I've got 7 times more deployments than they do. So it's like, what's the trade-off? You need to call me master chief, or you can say, hey, this dude deployed and deployed and deployed and deployed and deployed and deployed and deployed, because that's what I want to do. So for me, I go, that's a good trade-off. That's a good trade-off. I'll just, and that was just me. I'm just speaking to me. This is not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just, it's my personal life experiences. That's all.
Yeah. You know, one thing that kind of drove me towards, I think, making my decision as well, when I started having, well, it was before I started having kids, before I was married, we're coming back from deployment and I noticed the guys that were married and had kids. Yeah. Of course they were very excited to see their family. But their kids were scared of them, right? Especially when they were little, you know, they were little, they were scared of them. They were hiding behind mom and, you know, and I thought that was really tough for that returning SEAL to have that happen. But kids are kids and, you know, they get over
it.
You know, I will say this though, that same guy who was E5 at the time with a little kid, married, is still married, you know, 25 years later, still married, kids are grown. And he wound up doing 20 years and getting out as a master chief as well. So it is very possible to do that. It's just a sacrifice. No matter what job you're in, any job in the military, you're going to deploy half the year you're gone. it's a sacrifice, you know, and thank God there are people who can do that deployment after deployment after deployment, gain that kind of experience, and then teach it to the younger guys. And then they can make their decisions of whether or not they want to go that route or not. But it is, yes, it is very possible. Statistically speaking, it is hard. But statistically speaking, buds is hard.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting into a profession that is just hard, and there's not many people do that.
Now you know why buds is hard, right? It's okay. It's, you know, and that's where naval special warfare, like in the big picture of it all, is has created this amazing grand design. It's like thinking about a baseball diamond. If it was, you know, 2 foot shorter, 2 foot longer, it completely changed the dynamic of the game, right? Look at buds. Like, you and I can experience and have this conversation. It's like, if you look at the experiences, what people are experiencing now and what we did and all these sort of things, it yields the exact result it's intending on doing. And so what we're trying to do is, like, we're not saying buds should change. Buds works perfectly. So does the teams relative to what it's supposed to do. It's like, I'm not going to be angry at the teams for deploying me. That's why I came in. It's like being angry at beer for getting me drunk. Like, it's like, that's exactly what it's supposed to do, right? So I came in to be a SEAL. And that's the other thing that's cool about SEAL teams too, is there's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of great things you can do. A lot, especially in the teams. It really, like, there's a multitude of things we could do from a standpoint of, like, you know, a general's, air admiral's aide, all the way down to, like, I don't know, being a consultant at Columbia, right? The college, which we do. We got a SME at Columbia. So
you can go to college and be paid as a military active duty person being a student.
Yeah. Or, at Columbia, Harvard, or Stanford. Those are pretty good schools, right? Yeah, or Brown's another option.
You'll get Ivy League options just because you've made it through buds.
Yeah. With a C student high school diploma, you'll still get accepted at Harvard. You will, because I know two people that have executive master's degrees from Harvard, both enlisted guys, and they barely had a C average in high school. It's like, they have a master's degree from Harvard, just because they wore a trident. Like, I mean, they did the work. No, get me wrong. It's in a very advanced 10-month course, right? This speaks to the intellect of the individual, not the point of education.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, when you're young, you make dumb decisions. You know, when you're in high school and you don't like high school, you're probably not going to do very well in high school. Oh. Right. And then you join the Navy and you're like, hey, I'm doing pretty well at this. You know, I kind of like this. You know, I probably need to go back to college. While I do that, Navy will pay for it. Stay in. And, you know, then you take it a little more seriously. You know, there's a big difference between the 17-year-old and the 22-year-old. That's why Jeff and I always say, you know, don't be in a rush to do this.
So again, like, I know there's probably a million questions that can potentially come from this, but I think that, like, I guess my summary for all this is just, like, you have to be honest with yourself. Like, if you're unwilling to have these conversations with yourself, I would rethink doing this. I mean, I really would. It's not in a sense of, like, should I do it, shouldn't do it. It's like, don't have preconceived notions about how your life should be in this married realm, right? We have experienced the capacity of having healthy relationships in and outside the teams, right? Other people, like, I know a guy that was married for 37 years, the same woman, right? There's a twist to that at the back end of it. He married her. So it's weird. Like, this is a crazy story, right? I won't name names, but you may know who it is. Married for 37 years. He was this master chief his last 17 years in the teams. He was 17 years at the command. He spent 37 years in the teams, 17 years as a master chief, and he spent 22 of that time at the command of the 37. Married to the same woman, met her on his very first deployment to the Philippines. Married for 37 years. The day he retired, because I was doing his rehab when I was at BHP, he showed up one morning, he goes, because when we had the guys Monday through Friday, we had them in our apartments. We had apartments on the beach where iFly is. We had four apartments through the nonprofits. We put our guys to keep them away from being distracted, you know, around family and friends, keep focused, because a lot of them were either alcohol or had opioid problems. So we monitored them. And this was part of the monitoring. So we came in, like, on Friday, though, they were allowed to go back to their home for the weekend and come back on Monday. Unless they didn't think they could be sober, then we kept them, right? So point of it is, like, he comes in on on Monday after had going home. And he's like, you're not going to believe this. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, married for 37 years. My wife has always been telling me, as soon as you retired, you got the kids, I'm going home. She packed up all of her stuff while he was in his apartment, moved back to the Philippines without him knowing it. Just packed a bunch of bags and flew home. Left, he had three kids. Like, they're all high school graduates or in college too. And she's like, he comes in, he's like, I don't even know if I'm upset about this because she's been warning me for years. I just didn't think she was serious. Wow. So I was like, oh. And now, so there's a lot more to the story, but it gets a little bit muddy after that. But I just was like, oh, like, because I'm looking at going, man, he's like, how did you be married for 37 years? And then, because he and I had that conversation, because I was, you know, he was with us for 60 days, you know, wow. And it's like, I was like, we were talking. I was like, man, how do you stay married for 37 years in the team? That's bananas. He's like, yeah, man, that's crazy. Like, she's super mom, this, that, and the other, but she says going to leave me as soon as I retire. That week she left.
That's crazy.
Anyways, but I don't know what the moral of the story to that is, other than it's just a crazy story.
Well, I have one final thing to leave on, because here's where I saw a lot of people. They found the right woman and she's taking care of everything at home while you're away. Kids are good. You know, everything's working well. And where things screw up is you come back from a trip and then you start taking charge of what's going on at the house.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You're going to mess up everything.
Mom's right? The boss. Let it be.
She is commander in chief of the house.
Yes.
Right. And you are subordinate.
You are not the Navy SEAL, commander, lieutenant, chief, E5, and you walk in that house, your name is dad.
Yeah.
That's it. And you're right, Stu. Like, that is as silly as we're kind of potentially being. I agree. I couldn't be more serious on saying, like, this is real sound advice, folks. Like, real sound advice.
Yeah. Another one, too, is, you know, we're all fairly competitive people, right? We're wanting to strive to be the best at whatever we are. You know, and if you can do this, just one look, this is a good piece of advice I got too, was, you know, Smith, you're wanting to crush this. You're wanting to be the fastest, whatever here. You want to be the best officer here. Now, here's what you need to do when you go home is you drive into your driveway, you turn off the SEAL, and now you focus on being the best husband you can be. You focus on being the best dad that you can be. And that's all you focus on.
Yep.
Right. And you can apply some of that same
ferocity,
same, you know, go to it and get it done type of mentality to being a really good parent and husband.
Yeah. Cause the teams do a really, really good job of allowing you to create this process of this amazing soldier, we'll call it. Use that same, folks, this is the exact same process in which Stu and I build our business off of. Is it inherent to us as individuals? Well, I think that the SEAL teams just exacerbated this really amazing trust in the process. The same thing, that's what I'm learning, is that process of being an awesome team guy, it's a very similar process of being a really good husband and boyfriend, and take it seriously. It's so valuable. You may not, like, that doesn't mean like every single person you date is going to be like, yeah, I've had good relationships that turned out to be still good friends. Like, there's no reason, right? It's like, you can have good relationships. You can try them. You can fail them. But ultimately, it's really just learning how to communicate.
Yeah. So I think we answered the question as far as day-to-day life. You know, day-to-day life is busy, you know, at the team. It's very busy. Whether you're in peacetime world or you're in combat deployments all the time, I mean, you're busy regardless, because there are a lot of wickets you have to check to, you know, get to the next level, you know, to get to that deployment. You know, there's schools and training and so much other stuff that unfortunately you can't do in town.
Right.
Right. So yep. There's just a lot of travel everywhere. They're doing a lot better at keeping some of the training trying to pull some of the training.
The facilities are getting a lot better from what we, like, you know, like that Nerf gate down there, that whole training facility on San Diego is happening. Yeah. The command we were at, like that I was at, has a ton of stuff, obviously. And then even on the East Coast teams here, like Fort Story has really been built up.
Yep.
And I think that COVID probably is going to continue to push that idea of like, well, like, wait a minute, like, why are we driving like across the country to go to shooting school? And essentially we can just bring the shooting instructor up here with these great ranges. And that's smart. It's a good thing to do. And then the teams have the money. And I think that that's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, I definitely think the teams are getting a lot better at, you know, providing some stability at the house by doing local training. But once again, it's training. You're busy, constantly moving.
That's never going to change, right? It's always going to be busy.
Just the way it is. Yeah. So, all right, Jeff. Well, I appreciate it. Again, this is a good one. It's a good perspective coming from, you know, 11 years of war deployments at the, you know, team level and then the tier one level. And then mine was a peacetime deployments and a shore duty. So
two different
animals here, but you know, it is what it is, but you know, you can make it what you want it to be by just, you know, adhering to some of this advice here I wish you good luck. Don't get too discouraged by this conversation. That's just the way it is. I mean, you can make it work.
You make of it.
Yeah, you can make it work. So, all right. So, Jeff, you are at performancefirstus.com. You can check out all his stuff over there. My stuff's at stewsmithfitness.com. If you got questions, ping us and check out our Instagram lives and Facebook lives and all that stuff. We're usually answering questions live all the time as well. So, all right, Jeff. Thanks for another
appreciate it,
support. Thank you guys for listening. Until next time, we'll see you later.